Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, the 16th of September. Good morning and welcome to DW's Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko Kumed. In today's edition, South Sudan women tell of horrifying experiences as the conflict turns life harder than ever before.
I'm not really in a point of being happy with what is happening in the country. Many people are sleeping hungry. They don't eat. Even if you're working, you work like you're not working. There is no saving currently in the country.
Ethiopian journalist speaks about challenges of being a journalist in his country and his experience in prison.
If I can describe the situation there, it's horrible. It's a very crowded place. In that prison, around 3,000 inmates are kept. In one room where I have been kept, 130 people are kept there.
All that plus your say coming up shortly. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Life is hard. But in South Sudan, it's even harder. Inter-ethnic violence, fighting between government soldiers and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar, economic collapse, name it. All these have contributed to a life as hard as cracking a rock with a simple stone. To crown it all, human rights violation has reached its peak with women suffering the most. A UN team of human rights experts who visited the country confirmed that women have suffered more atrocities since the conflict broke out. They range from rape to tax extortion and killings. Wake Simon Wudu brings us more on that.
The UN human rights team of three investigators spent a week visiting key spots across the country where gross human rights abuses are believed to have taken place. Yasmin Soka, the team's leader, said they heard of accounts of mass killings of civilians. She also said that the ongoing intimidation and harassment of civil society activists and journalists had forced many to flee to neighboring countries.
Women, both young and old, gave graphic accounts of being gang raped by armed men in uniform. The women also raised the issue of numerous checkpoints mounted by government soldiers who extort what are called taxes from them. Women also spoke about the ongoing attacks and killings of women by armed men in uniform, again, while out on livelihood activities outside of the POC site.
The POC, or Protection of Civilians Sites, are the UN camps established across the country. They host over 100,000 internally displaced persons. The human rights experts met several senior government officials, and Soka said it's time the state takes action against the perpetrators of right abuses and crimes committed. South Sudan's government says it has sentenced more than 60 soldiers for killing and looting, but not for rape. Sophie, a Juba resident, described the constant outbursts of violence in the city.
Till now, the situation in South Sudan is not that bad. It's okay, but still the fear is there because you can sometimes hear a gunshot. We only pray that nothing happens at all again.
She explained that the economic situation is worsening day by day and that ordinary people could afford less and less.
I'm not really in a point of being happy with what is happening in the country. Many people are sleeping hungry. They don't eat. Even if you're working, you work like you're not working. There is no saving currently in the country.
As South Sudanese struggle to continue with their lives, the political situation remains uncertain. The UN is hoping to send 4,000 extra peacekeepers to the country, but on Wednesday it said that the government had to date not fulfilled its pledge to cooperate.
Wake Simon Wudu reporting. Now, insecurity in South Sudan, Burundi and Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has seen thousands of civilians fleeing from one country to another. After hosting Burundian refugees for over 1 year, Uganda now wants to repatriate them. To this effect, Ugandan State Minister for Relief and Disaster Preparedness, Musa Francis Echeru, is in Burundi to discuss the subject with Burundian authorities. About 40,000 Burundian refugees fled to Uganda in April 2015 following the outbreak of violence. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nyerora reports.
Upon landing at the Bujumbura International Airport, Ugandan State Minister for Relief and Disaster Preparedness Musa Francis Echweru said first impressions in Burundi show that Western media has been misrepresenting the country's image.
This is not the Burundi that CNN and Al Jazeera. The one where people are smiling, where people are hospitable, where people are rejoicing, where people are... I've seen a different Burundi. We have refugees under my care back home. Close to about 40,000 Burundi refugees in Uganda. The total number of refugees in Uganda comes to about 700,000 now.
Echweru said Burundi has the third largest number of refugees in Uganda's territory after South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. He called on Burundian refugees to consider returning home, stressing that the current situation in Burundi is better.
Are you really sure that home is that bad? That's the message we shall be taking to our brothers and sisters back home.
But many residents in the Burundian capital Bujumbura, however, said it's too early for refugees to return home. This woman who spoke on a condition of anonymity told the DW that the country looks stable, but the security situation is still volatile.
There are rumors that said rebels can come at any time to attack. We cannot say refugees can come back now because it's still doubtful. Concerning the security, what may happen tomorrow.
She further said that refugees should wait at least 6 months before returning home. Another Bujumbura businessman who also asked not to be named told DW that the government should not force Burundians in Uganda to return home.
Those people are not feeling that there is a peace in their heart first. And then if there is no peace in their hearts, therefore, even in the country, they assume that there is no peace. But the people who went into exile, who doesn't know the real situation in Burundi, he is reluctant to come back. Then he has to have enough evidences to say that there is peace and then let him come back to his country, home country.
During his four-day visit in Burundi, Ugandan State Minister Echweru will travel to the countryside to assess the security situation. According to the UN, some 270,000 Burundians fled to neighboring countries, mostly Tanzania, Rwanda, Uganda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, since the outbreak of the crisis in April last year.
Apolline Nyerora in Bujumbura.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
We stay within the region and with the same topic, from discussions of refugee repatriations between Uganda and Burundi to Kenya, where Somali refugees who had returned to Somalia encountered nothing but negative experiences. Now, Human Rights Watch is accusing the Kenyan government of coercing refugees to return home. Most of them lived in Dadaab camp in northern Kenya. Andrew Wasike reports.
In the report released on Thursday, the Human Rights Watch says the Kenyan government has not offered the Somali refugees any real choice of whether to stay in Kenya or return back to their homeland. The report also slams the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, for not providing accurate information about the security situation in Somalia. Human Rights Watch interviewed 100 refugees at the camp for the report, and most of them referred to the government's continuous announcement of the camp's closure on radio as reasons for their decision to return home. Babatunde Olukboji from the Human Rights Watch says that the Somali refugees are caught between a rock and a hard place.
The Kenyan government is not giving Somalis any alternative to these so-called voluntary repatriations, putting them in grave danger. Many refugees have few options upon returning to Somalia, and they end up in informal and often dangerous camps for displaced people.
The Dadaab camp is currently home to about 300,000 Somalis. Since Kenya announced the repatriation program, only a few thousand Somalis volunteer to return. Human Rights Watch says those who volunteer to return fear Kenya will force them out if they stay. Halima, a grandmother, was told that her hometown, Baletawa, in Somalia, was safe, so she decided to send her family.
My grandchild, my daughter, and her husband volunteered and they returned to Somalia through the repatriation program.
But as soon as Halima's family arrived in Baletawa, they found out that their home was far from safe. Her granddaughter, 9-year-old Ramla, painfully recalls what they encountered on their arrival.
When we arrived in Baletawa, in Somalia, there were heavy explosions. I ran away and was separated from my mother. There were bullets flying everywhere, so my mother and I ran in different directions. I looked around for my father, but could not find him either. I returned back to Kenya and now live in Hagadera with my grandmother. I feel safe here.
Ramla has since not heard from her mother and father. Grandma Halima explains how she was reunited with her granddaughter.
She was seen confused and crying. A woman who knew our family took her across the border to Mandera in Kenya. That's how I got her back here.
Amina, another Somali refugee who went back through the program, narrates her horrendous ordeal.
The camp in Somalia was not safe at all. 10 days after I gave birth, a gunman entered my tent and put a gun in my mouth. I had no clothes on my upper body because it was too hot that night. And a man sat beside me. He told me to keep quiet. I wanted to shout and cry, but I thought he would kill me, so I just kept quiet. He then raped me inside my tent.
Human Rights Watch say that under international refugee practice, repatriation is only considered voluntary if refugees have a genuinely free choice about whether to return and are fully informed about conditions in their home country. The report states that neither condition was met under the current voluntary repatriation program. Kenya's Interior Ministry has not responded to the report yet, but its Cabinet Secretary Joseph Nkaiseri had earlier said that the government is receiving additional funds from donors and the repatriation process is expected to end sometime next year, moving the deadline from November 2016.
Andrew Asike with that report.
Human rights.
For our human rights segment, we go to Ethiopia. Now, this is one country that has become synonymous with human rights violations. The government is increasingly becoming autocratic and suppression of dissent voices is equally on the rise. Dozens of people were killed during the recent Oromo protests. Media freedom is long gone as journalists continue to be arrested. Tesfalem Valdayes is an Ethiopian journalist who was jailed and suffered under the hands of government authorities. He is currently in Germany and shared his experience with Isaac Mugabe.
If I can describe the situation there, it's horrible. It's a very crowded place. In that prison, around 3,000 inmates are kept. They are separated in different zones. And in one room where I have been kept, 130 people are kept there. It's not hygienic, and the political prisoners' treatment is much, much different than the ordinary criminals, and it's a remand prison. We were released 2 weeks before Barack Obama's visit to Ethiopia.
During your detention, were you able to communicate to your family?
No, for the first few months, like the first 3 months, it was very difficult to communicate with our family. In fact, the first 2 months, we didn't see anyone while we were in during the interrogation. But later, after we transferred to the remand prison, we are allowed to be visited by our families. But this is for the men. There were two women with us. One is a journalist, another one is a blogger. Their visitation right was limited, and they can only be visited by close family members, like sisters, mothers, and fathers. And they are only allowed to be visited for 10 minutes.
Why is that women had to be segregated in such a way that they were only allowed a limited time to be visited?
We don't know until now what is the reason.
10 days ago, a blaze erupted at the Addis Ababa's high security Kilinto prison, where many of the opposition figures and journalists are detained. And this is where you were also, leaving at least 23 inmates dead. What went on in your mind when you heard about the blaze?
It was a shocking news for me. I didn't expect such a tragedy will happen in that maximum security prison because there are security cameras everywhere. It is a highly guarded place. You know, the prisoners are not allowed even to cook or even to smoke in that area, you know. So when I heard that there is a fire accident is going on in that place. I was really shocked. I was here in Germany. I contacted my sources on the ground, and they told me that there was a gunfire. It is really confusing for me. I know the place, and it's very difficult to get an access of fire. And still now, the government doesn't even reveal the identities of those people who are killed in that fire accident.
So you didn't believe the government whatsoever that the inmates were responsible for this?
It is very difficult to believe. I mean, if you visit that place, you will get the same feeling about it.
And on that note, what's your message to the outside world, in particular media rights organizations, on what is going on inside Ethiopia's detention centers or jails?
These international organizations, press organizations and others, they should do much more when it comes to the Ethiopian situation, because it is ongoing, and it is repetitively the Ethiopian government showed that they are not tolerating any dissent voice. So whenever someone is arrested, this organization, they come up with some statements, and after that, they just forget about these prisoners. What I expect from these organizations are strong advocacy towards the imprisonment of journalists and the bad treatment of journalists in that country.
Ethiopian journalist Tesfalem Valdeyes sharing his experience with Isaac Mugabe. Now to the world of business, where two giant agriculture companies, Bayer and Monsanto, just signed a merger agreement which will see Bayer acquire the latter for $66 billion. Bayer is a German company that specializes in the production of healthcare and agriculture products. On the other hand, Monsanto is an American company producing mainly genetically modified seeds. The merger enhances the two giants' global monopoly in the production of agricultural supplies. As they signed the agreement, the CEO of Bayer, Werner Baumann, noted this as a major step forward in the crop science business. I've been speaking to Maria Mayet, Executive Director, Africa Center for Biodiversity, and I started by asking her about the impact of the merger.
Well, I think that it will represent, or it will result in, one of the largest agribusinesses on the planet, because I think that it will put together in one place one company that will control almost 30% of the world's seeds and around 25%, that's a quarter percent of the world's pesticide market. But I think that we must also remember that this merger is part of a bigger consolidation and concentration in the global agriculture input market, because as we speak, the deal between ChemChina and Syngenta is being finalized, and also the merger between Dow and DuPont.
What are the likely risks arising out of this merger, and how will it affect farmers in Africa, bearing in mind that the American company is known for its lobbying tactics to government?
Monsanto already controls much of the hybrid maize seed market in southern Africa and in parts of West Africa. Further expansion into the seed market, I think that we will see a greater push into the genetically modified seed market, particularly cotton, GM cotton in West Africa, through the Bayer face, as opposed to the discredited Monsanto face, particularly after the failure of BT cotton in Burkina Faso.
Do you foresee appropriate regulation by African policymakers?
We will wait and see what happens with the approval of the merger in the US and in Germany or at the European level. If we lose it at that level, we will then see possibly African governments, through the pressure being exerted on many of them to open their markets to GM crops and agriculture inputs, to adopt the Green Revolution technologies in the agriculture systems. I think that regulation will not be something that African governments will pay a lot of attention to.
Will Bayer attempt to clean Monsanto's track record?
Already Monsanto has a very tainted record in Africa. It has a very bad public relations image because of the way they dismissed consumer concerns, the way they persecuted biosafety scientists who try to do independent studies. They just have an appalling track record, and they're very hated by consumers and environmentalists around the world. And I think that Bayer will want to distance itself from that image.
Now, Monsanto is blamed for the death of many farmers in Asia. Coming back to Africa, how independent do you think an African farmer will be once these global giants penetrate the market?
Small-scale farmers predominate in African agriculture. These farmers operate in a very low profit margin owing to having very little control over, they're more price takers at the farm gate. So significant changes in input costs will have a huge impact on farmers' ability to survive, and consumers will have to pay much more for food downstream in the market.
Mariam Mayet of Africa Center for Biodiversity.
Your say.
We here in Africa Link do honor your opinion. That's why we welcome your comments on any of the stories we air. But we do not stop at that. We also go ahead and actually air your comments. Fred Mouvoni and Leonie Carl are here with your say.
Brothers, sisters,
and mes frères africains,
stop tribalism. Stop corruption.
Abat la corruption.
Let's unite.
Soyons unis.
Let's kick off this segment in South Africa, where the government on Tuesday denied entry to an American pastor and his group for propagating hate speech against minorities.
Yes, Fred. Pastor Stephen Anderson, a renowned Holocaust denier, said gays and lesbians should be killed, and the decision to deny him entry into South Africa was welcomed by many.
Johan Howell says the Christian community in the United States of America should have the courage to speak out against people like him. Silence is equal to approval.
But Liam Foley mocked the decision to deny entry to the U.S. pastor, saying, African political leaders who have had people killed continue to be welcomed all around the world.
Unite and reflect. Wake up and
And we also reported about the East African Community Heads of State Summit, where leaders from the bloc postponed the signing of economic partnership agreements with the EU until December. Kenya and Rwanda fear they may lose access to European markets.
Yes, and Mohamed Ustaji Raipa commended the Tanzania president for his decision not to sign the pact. He went on to say that Tanzania needs not be bullied into treaties and pacts unless they add value to Tanzanian economy and benefits to Tanzanians.
Leonie, just to remind our listeners, these comments don't reflect DW's opinion on the topics talked about, but have been moderated to conform with DW's editorial standards. And we also reported about the IGAD summit that was held on Tuesday in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. What do we have?
Yes, and Franz Manko Ngogo from Tanzania thinks the meeting was crucial to revive Somalia and bring to a democratic path.
Ngogo added the summit opened Somalia's closed doors to the world.
And that's all we had for you, dear listeners, on this week's Your Say.
Fred Mouvoni and Leonie Carl with your say. Let's now remind ourselves of some of our main stories today. The conflict in South Sudan has made life hard, while traumatized women have been speaking of their horrifying experiences. And an Ethiopian journalist has been sharing his experience in an Ethiopian prison. While in Kenya, Human Rights Watch faults the government for coercing Somali refugees. With that, we come to the end of today's program. Remember, we welcome your opinion on this program. Please send us your comment via text message to +491609575910 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.com. You can also send us a letter to AfricaLink DW53110 Bonn, Germany. Thank you for listening. From me, Jane Ayeko Kumet, and the production team, Abubakar Jallo, Eliana Gladucci, and the technician, Andrea Yost, enjoy your weekend.